All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Daily Faceoff Podcast comes courtesy of the Nation Network. Here's your host, Brock Segan, with Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 9, Episode 21 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. I'm your host, Brock Segan, but really, today, our true host is going to be D, because we're trying something new today where we got Judge D on the case. Me and Beebs are going to present arguments as to which waiver wire player Judge D should pick up, and Judge D will determine who made the better case and who he would pick up. So Judge D, how's it going, bud?
Good, man. I just want to clarify too, unlike normal judges, I will not be impartial at all. My personal biases will be alive and well in this episode of the podcast, towards players. That is, you guys know I love you both equally. So,
So this is probably where I shouldn't mention that I slipped D a couple dollars this morning to be like, hey, choose my guys, make me sound smart. But no bias from D, or actual bias from D. But I'm excited to impress D. You know, I rarely get to do that, so it's going to be fun, and I get to go head to head with Brock, and all together, I think, you know, we're just giving you some juicy players to grab. So that's the fun here. Cause even if you don't want the one that I give you, you're probably going to want the one that Brock gives you, or vice versa. So, let's make D make some tough choices, Brock.
Yeah. I mean, if this was an actual courtroom, I think both of our lawyers would have very strongly frowned upon our attire decisions. We've got a Packers fan for a judge, and we are rocking the Lions gear one day ahead of their Thanksgiving meeting. So immediately, thankfully we're both doing it, or else the bias would be there right from the get-go. So just to give you an idea of how things are going to work today, we have several categories: 50 to 40% owned, 40 to 30, 30 to 20, 20 to 10, under 10% owned, one defenseman that's under 40% owned, and one goalie that's under 40% owned. Those are our tiers for today. So Beebs and I will have one player for each one of those categories, and Judge D will decide who made the better case. So I'm going to get us started. We will go from 40 to 50% owned to start, and I'm going to go with Tyler Seguin. center right wing eligible from the Dallas Stars, 47% owned. Coming into Wednesday night, he has 10 points, 5 goals, 5 assists, 19 shots, good for 3.2 per game, while playing 17 and a half minutes per game in his last 6 games. 10 points in 6 games, not too bad. His line is currently averaging 3.9 expected goals for per 60, 43 scoring chances, 17 high danger chances. Truly elite stuff from Dallas's now second line, potentially their first line, the way, whichever way you want to look at it. And that's come in 130 minutes of time on ice at 5v5. So if he maintains his 3.2 shots per game over the remaining 65 games, he'd be on pace for 208 more shots, which is roughly 23 to 25 goals. So it's kind of easy to forget just how good Tyler Seguin and Matt Duchene were. And they're not that old, both 32 years old. So I don't think it's outlandish to think that both of them can be point per game players this season. And the way they've looked so far, I don't think it's too far out of the realm of possibility. And I like Tyler Seguin, 47% owned. Beeps.
I also like Tyler, but I like someone a little bit more. And it's Owen Tippett out in Philly. We've talked about this guy a few times because he does something that we like a lot, and that's called shooting. Currently 48% owned. Tippett has 7 goals, 6 assists for 13 points in 18 games. But as mentioned, he's got 61 shots during those 18 games. He's on power play 1. He's on line 2, and he is right wing eligibility. Tippett right now, kind of the thing that I think is keeping him from the 50 to 60 range is his time on ice. But that's kind of exciting for us because he's still producing, still putting up an absolute bonkers amount of shots while only averaging 15, 13 time on ice. So there's a little bit more room to go there as he grows kind of as a Flyer. And as Torts continues to like him, we've seen Torts come out multiple times saying he loves his game. Currently on pace for 278 shots on goal. That would rank him 14th in the whole NHL last year in shots. With that, you know, more success is going to come than what he already has. And he's producing at quite a nice rate. Philly also has the 27th best power play in the league, which is not very good. So that's only hopefully going to improve as the season goes on and some of those young guys get clicking, which should help him since he only has 1 power play goal and 2 power play points this year. So I like Owen Tippett. I think this is a great, you can grab him now, has a great floor, but that ceiling is, ooh, anyone who has 300 shots as their ceiling, that gets me sweaty. That makes me all shake in my Lions gear. So I'm pretty jacked up about Owen, but yeah, I think his own percentage could use probably about a 10 to 12% bump, but until then, you know, I think he makes a good grab if you need those other categories. So,
all right, I'm going to come in with my ruling here. You guys may or not recall Owen Tippett, a favorite of mine last year. I had him as a breakout going into the season. Brock conveniently skipping over the fact that Tyler Seguin's shooting 16% right now with an on-ice shooting percentage of 14%. So Dallas 2, those numbers are impressive, but I'm not banking on the Tyler Seguin renaissance just yet. I'm sticking with my boy Owen Tippett, and I got to side with my boy Beavs on this one.
Woo!
Placating to the judge early on here, taking his breakout pick as a pickup. I like it. All right. Well, speaking of placating to the judge, this one might fit right into your hand because 30 to 40% owned. I'm going with Toronto Maple Leaf, Tyler Bertuzzi at 31% owned, left wing eligible. Bertuzzi had a horribly slow start to his Maple Leafs career, posting just 3 points in his first 12 games. However, he seems to be settling in now with 5 points, 2 goals, 3 assists in his last 5 games. Maybe most importantly is the fact that Bertuzzi seems to be pretty tied onto a line with John Tavares and William Nylander, who may be the best player in the NHL right now. He has been absolutely dynamite this season, and that line has been absolutely terrific. 3.4 expected goals for per 60, 39 scoring chances for, 16 high danger, close to what Dallas 2 is doing. Elite, elite numbers from these guys. And to me, it'd be weird if I didn't mention his shot volume. He's averaging 3.6 shots per game during his 5-game heater. So things are definitely heating up here for Tyler Bertuzzi.
I'm laughing over here, Brock, because you thought you were playing a homer pick here, and then I come from the rafters with Wyatt Johnston in Dallas, one of D's favorite players, as we know on the pod, and for good reason. Wyatt's got 7 goals, 7 assists for 14 points in 17 games this year. He's got 41 shots, 12 pims, and he is currently, this is where I'm not loving Wyatt, but he's currently on line 3 with Jason Robertson, so not bad, and on power play 2 and strict center. One thing about Wyatt, though, Wyatt has been coming on as of late. He's kind of like Owen Tippett, where it's been time of ice that's kind of kept people, I think, from really grabbing him. But he is also only 20 years old. In the last 8 games, Wyatt's averaged 17.07 time on ice. And during that span, the kid is shooting the puck. He has 22 shots on goal, which across a full season would be 225. If you throw in his career 15.4 shooting percentage, he's a 35-goal scorer across that span, and that would rank him in the top 20 in the NHL in goals in the top 40 around Steven Stamkos area. So Wyatt Johnson is showing some great trends here of just getting better than what we've already seen. And when you're getting 7 goals and 7 assists in 17 games, that's quite good production already, something that you would want on your roster. We always talk about how, you know, there's like a threshold, maybe 55, 60 points where you want someone. This guy's far surpassing it. So get him on there. It's only going to get better. And as I love reminding people every time we talk about him, 124 points in 68 games to lead the OHL in points in 21-22. This kid's an absolute stud at filling the stat sheet. And I think you got to get Wyatt Johnston on your team pretty much immediately if he's there. I don't really care the size of your league. Maybe 8 or more. Start grabbing Wyatt. But yeah, there's my sell on D's boy, which isn't really a sell. It's just like a reminder.
This is a tough one. I mean, I think Wyatt's got some more long-term upside. The issue there is obvious with just Roope Hintz playing in front of him. It's kind of opened up already for him with them shuffling around that top line. I don't necessarily think Roope is to blame, and I would expect him to get back with Robertson before too long. I love Wyatt long-term, but I think I got to go with Bertuzzi just because I think he's going to be firmly in that top 6 for the whole of the season, whereas Wyatt I could easily see kind of falling back to that third line 15-minute-a-night role with Jamie Benn stapled to his hip. So it's a tough one, but I think I'm going to go with Bertuzzi. I'll side with Brock on this one, but I love Wyatt. I love the upside there, and I definitely think both should be owned right now.
All right, moving on. We've got the 20 to 30% owned category. Another fan favorite, or I guess show favorite. My boy Nikolaj Ehlers of the Winnipeg Jets, left wing, eligible, 24% owned. I have not given up on Ehlers yet, if you haven't noticed. Just 2 assists in his first 6 games, but has picked up 7 points, including 5 goals, most importantly, in his last 11 games. The usage, I don't know if it's going to come around. It's still around 15, 16 minutes a night. I think that's what we got to get used to here with Nikolaj Ehlers, given the amount of ice time that they are giving Adam Lowry every single night. But he has still managed to average 3.2 shots per game in his last 11 games. So this is basically operating at his floor right now, and he still has plenty of room to grow, you know, in ice time if it ends up happening. But there's still plenty of upside with that shot volume. If he can average 3.2 shots per game at 15, 16 minutes a night, I'm perfectly fine with that. He can continue to fill your stat sheet. And at 20 to 30% on, we're starting to get into bigger leagues, and he should certainly be on your roster because of his nightly upside.
Yeah, no, this was a tough one because it's like, you know, when you see the college basketball bracket and it's like a strong 4 seed against the 13, that's what I'm coming in with here. Yeah, that's right. Ehlers is the 4, but the 13's hot, and 13's been cooking lately. That is Alex Iafallo out in Winnipeg. 21% owned at the moment, left wing, right wing eligibility. This stud has 4 goals, 9 assists for 13 points in 17 games, 37 shots on goal while averaging 17.46 on ice. Seems that Iafallo may have actually found a home now that he's out of Los Angeles after 6 seasons. The guy has 9 points in his last 8 games. So if we're on a recency bias, he's on an absolute tear. He's over a point per game player. But the one thing, since we are in court, I do have to point out, Iafallo has some flaws. He's only on pace for 179 shots this year, which is okay because he had 215 just 2 years ago. So he does have that 200 plus shots in the bag, but he's still producing at the moment. He is locked to the hip of line one and power play one. He's producing on the power play at the moment. He has 4 power play points, 2 of which are goals. So he's not really going to get pushed off that. He's currently on pace for career highs in goals, which would be 19, assists, 43, and then points, which is 63. And at that point, if I could get a 63-point man out of someone who's 21% owned at any point in the year, I'm probably going to take it. I love the usage. I like the ice time. He's in a great position. He's really just tagging along with the big boys out there. So for me, I am going Alex Iafallo for this one, but I don't think you can go wrong either way. And things are going to get better on that team, and both these guys are going to do well because of it.
Yeah, tough one. It's kind of an opportunity versus upside argument here. You know, Ifalo has proven his whole way through to be an effective two-way player. He's really good in his own end, and he gets a ton of ice time because of it. It was the same thing in LA, but I don't know. I have Ehlers in, I think, like over half of my leagues, and he's been beyond frustrating to this point, and it still just feels like you can't drop him, whereas Ifalo, I don't think I would hesitate to drop if the weekly schedule didn't shake out that way. So because of that, I certainly see the argument for Ifalo, but I think I got to stick with Ehlers and just hope that, you know, Rick Bonus comes to the senses sooner or later and gives Ehlers the ice time that he deserves. And I definitely think that, you know, Cole Perfetti looking as good as he has over the last little bit helps that argument as well. It's not just Ehlers that's pushing for more ice time. I think it's that line as a whole. So, yeah, hopefully we see less ice time go to Adam Lowry. Yeah, but we've been saying that for years. So I don't know. But yeah, I'm going to go with the upside here. But I agree. I think Ifalo's got, you know, he's anytime you can fit or you need an extra skater in your lineup and you could fit Ifalo in there.
Nasty.
Yeah, I think he's a great pickup. But again, I wouldn't hesitate to drop him if the schedule lined up that way. Whereas Ehlers, I mean, I'm still holding on to him. So I think because of that, I got to roll with Ehlers here.
I respect it because I would personally rather have Ehlers on my roster, but I'm trying to sell Ifalo. So.
If I could provide some cross here, I would say that the one thing working against Ifalo probably more than anything is the fact that it does look like Gabe Vilardi is getting pretty close. That being said, Ifalo in that top line with, you know, is really kind of taken off with Ifalo on it. So there is opportunity for him to remain there. And maybe it's going to come at the expense of maybe somebody like Vlad Namestnikov. We could see maybe Vilardi at center, Cole Perfetti at center, and Vilardi slotting into that second line, because Ifalo in that top line is really kind of taken off, you know, since the Vilardi injury. So one other just name I want to drop outside of court here, we'll take a little recess, is Logan Cooley. We talked about him a little bit, but coming into this evening, they are going to run Cooley on the top line with Nick Schmaltz and Clayton Keller. He's 31% owned right now, so fitting right into this category that we're talking about. And as you know, our listeners will probably remember very fondly, because this is right when we started talking about Barrett Hayton last year, was his takeoff really worked side by side with when he got put on a line with Clayton Keller and Nick Schmaltz. And this could be the exact opportunity that Logan Cooley needs to take his game to the next level, obviously much earlier on in his career. But if he, you know, Hayton didn't put up a whole lot of points early. That underlying numbers were still there. But like, if Cooley can settle into this spot, that might bump Hayton down the lineup a little bit. And Cooley could be like a real, real asset here moving forward. Obviously, his own percentage skyrocketed early in the season. It's come down when he was moved to the third line, wasn't playing quite as much. But with Schmaltz and Keller, if he can kind of cement himself in that role, man, there's a lot of upside there. D, I know you love Cooley. You liked him a lot in the preseason. What do you think about Cooley's status moving forward here at this new line? You gotta love it. As Hayton, Keller, and Schmaltz lovers, this is perfect for us.
Yeah, and I don't know if I do think that Hayton will probably slide back into that role, but you never know, right? If he lights the world on fire, it's gonna be hard to take Cooley off that line. But I mean, Hayton was doing a lot of good things on that line that unfortunately weren't showing up in the score sheet, and were allowing, you know, Keller and Schmaltz. And it was really a bit of an anomaly, right? Like Keller and Schmaltz to be at a point per game through, I think it was like 12 or 13 games before Hayton actually got a point. But yeah, I mean, he does all the dirty work for that line. And typically, I mean, ahead of this year, tends to get rewarded for it on the score sheet. At least that's what we saw all the second half of last season. So, but I agree. I mean, Logan Cooley, incredible short-term upside, so long as he's on that line. Definitely a lot more than Travis Boyd was offering in that same spot. So love to see Cooley moving up the lineup. Be interesting to see what happens when Hayton comes back. I like I said, I do think it's going to take, you know, a pretty big heater from Cooley for Hayton to lose a spot due to injury, but you never know. We'll see. And Cooley certainly has the talent and the upside, and even just kind of holding down a role in that second line and maybe bumping Bjugstad down a little bit. If you can play with Michelli, I mean, you know, I'm big on Michels as well. I think that could be a bit of a dangerous duo as well, but tough because those top two lines have been clicking so as much as they have been before the injury to Hayton. So we'll see how it shakes out, but I agree. Tons of short-term value there.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning, like, even if he doesn't supplant Hayton once Hayton is back, it is worth mentioning that Hayton is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. So this isn't going to be a short-term thing. It's going to prolong into the new year. So Cooley certainly provides tons of extra value here in the next month or so, so long as he's skiing on that top line. Because, yeah, Travis Boyd, certainly not the answer, especially when you have somebody as talented as Logan Cooley. But, Biebs, I've went first here with the first three picks. So why don't you take the lead here with the 10 to 20% owned range?
Yeah, and before I do, I just want to throw a just a little bit of shade at Travis Boyd. They actually clocked in with the new NHL stats that they have on the page. One of the reporters online looked into it and they said Travis Boyd is the slowest skater in the NHL. So poor Travis Boyd, you hate to see it. You got to imagine he's sitting there. He's like, crap, why do we have these extra stats out? But regardless, just wanted to mention that for him. So yeah, he's not going to be.
It's so funny too, because like when the NHL Edge data first came out, they were like kind of shielding the shitty players, because like anybody that was good, it told them, told you exactly which percentile they were in terms of, you know, their production. And then if anybody was bad, it just said they're below 50, the 50th percentile. It's just like, they're just below average. They wouldn't like call anybody out, but somebody's dug through the data and, you know, broken it down a little bit further. And now people are just getting outed for being slow and shooting like super soft and all that. But 10 to 20%, take it away, Biebs.
Yeah, I more just wanted to start the prerequisite with a super slow skater, because I'm going to give you one right here. That's not a selling point at any point. But James Van Riemsdyk out in Boston, currently 17% owned. Not the quickest skater, as mentioned, but the guy loves the Geno, and he is stuck on power play one. 5 goals, 8 assists for 13 points in 17 games, 39 shots. 3 power play goals and 6 power play points. We're kind of digging through the barrel at this point. We're digging through the bargain bin. We're looking for some type of gold. And that's kind of where JVR shines a bit with that power play time. At the 10 to 20 range, you're not going to find a ton of guys who are on a top power play, let alone Boston's power play, which is very, very good. And JVR just kind of seems to have stuck himself in there as the net front presence. And as mentioned, that's led to 3 goals. Power play goals and 6 power play points. The guy as a whole, though, is on pace for 24 goals, 38 assists, and 62 points with 188 shots on goal, basically parallel to Alex Iafallo, with a little bit less own percentage. So I guess it kind of makes sense that they're around there. But JVR currently has more points than Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jamie Benn, Alex Ovechkin, Troy Terry, and Miro Heiskanen, and guys like that. So he's been producing, and I think it's just kind of a safe bet if you want to throw someone in. We're talking about the range here, where most people are going to be using these guys as spot starts. So if you need a spot start, what's better than having someone who jumps on the power play almost every time with Brad Marchand, with Charlie McAvoy, and with David Pastrnak, who a lot of people have as this year's Hart Trophy winner. So I think that JVR is a very, very sneaky play. And as mentioned, 39 shots, he's shooting as well. So he's helping us in a lot of categories at this percentage. I like JVR. He was a nice standout for me. But Brock, you can follow that bad boy up, because now I know how it feels to lead.
There you go. I'm going to go with JJ Paterka, right wing, 20% owned from the Buffalo Sabres. Paterka was a player I mentioned a few times last year because the underlying numbers were insane. Him, Mittelstadt, and Jack Quinn were absolutely unreal at 5v5. And the 2020 number 34 overall pick has taken the next step so far this season. 14 points, 7 goals, 7 assists in his first 18 games, but he also scored his 8th tonight. So now 8 goals, 7 assists in 19 games so far this season. The best news for Paterka is he has been the increase in usage recently. He was averaging 13.5 minutes per game in his first 9 games, but is up to nearly 17 minutes per night in his last 9 games. Additionally, he's been the Tage Thompson replacement on the top power play unit, and Tage Thompson isn't expected back anytime soon. So Paterka has really shown great chemistry with Mittelstadt in the past. The top line's pretty solidified with Cousins, Skinner, and Tuck, but Paterka and Mittelstadt often play more time per evening at 5v5. Paterka's been great at 5v5, and now he's getting the chance to run with the top power play unit as well. At 20% owned, he sticks out like a sore thumb, and I absolutely, you know, want all the JJ Paterka I can get right now.
I said my biases would be at play here. Seeing JVR in a Bruins uniform does make me sick to my stomach.
I knew
it. No, I agree with Biebs, though. I think JVR is a great spot start whenever you need it. Anytime you can get a piece of that Bruins power play and not just like kind of a net front stand in the way, like we know JVR is pretty effective in that kind of, it's kind of the net front, but almost like that side bumper role too, right? It's kind of a mix between the two, and has a, you know, really skilled with the puck for his size, still at his age and able to get it up in a heartbeat right up against the post there. And he's scored a ton of goals like that. But I just feel like JVR at this point, we kind of know what he is. And there's just there's something about the unknown with JJ Paterka. And like Brock said, he was great in a limited, I guess, limited sample, but more limited ice time, a limited role last season. And again, bit of bias here. I did just talk about him a couple weeks ago as a great streaming slash keep him on your roster long term if he's able to hold down that role. So yeah, I agree. I think Brock got the first pick on this one as well. So feeling for Biebs on that. But yeah, I'll go with the unknown with JJ Paterka because we don't quite know how good this kid will be. And like I said, I feel like we've seen, I mean, JVR's 34 now. He kind of is what he is.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a whole lot of ceiling there. And I know you agree, Beeb. So I'm gonna lean with Paterka here, but I would agree that again, JVR is a great spot start whenever you're in need.
I would heavy lean with Paterka as well. But yeah, if your league doesn't have him, jump on that JVR train, baby.
Beebs is like the guy, the lawyer's like telling him not to like talk in court or not to plead guilty. And Beebs just pipes up and yells in the middle of court all the time, just being held in contempt at all time. Let it be known that the way we chose these players was actually a draft. And I can't remember who Biebs took first overall, but I took Paterka at the 1-2 turn. So I took Paterka early to make sure I could lock him in because absolutely one of the best pickups Wyatt. At the moment. Oh, you went Wyatt, yeah. So and he didn't get you a point. So
he was close, though.
Yeah. Early bust.
I'm still going back and forth on that one.
If Biebs, you weren't listening to your lawyer, I'm certainly not listening to my lawyer. I think you might have the upper hand here with the under 10% owned category. You made this selection first, and I'm going to make an argument. I'm going to make my case, but I don't feel very good about my chances of winning this one.
No, it's okay. You're that lawyer who got like assigned to the person because they couldn't, like no one else wanted to take the case or they just couldn't afford one. So
at this point we're doing just public defender duty, trying to sell under 10% owned.
And we are giving ourselves up, but no, this person who I'm going to suggest, I actually think should be like 30% owned, maybe 40% owned. Kirill Marchenko though, out in Columbus, currently 7% owned, which actually made me blink like 8 times when I was looking at it. Before tonight, Kirill had 4 goals, 5 assists for 9 points in 17 games played. 4 PIMs, 49 shots on goal across those 79 games. He's playing line one. He's on power play two. Now, after tonight, Kirill Marchenko now has 5 goals, 6 assists for 11 points in 18 games. And as mentioned, he shoots a ton. He is on pace for 236 shots on goal. If I'm going to get pumped out, I follow or JVR getting 188. Then I'm going to get real jacked up about 236 from a 23-year-old. He's played over 19 minutes in 2 of his last 3 games, and he's on pace for another high-end minute game tonight, even with this absolute gong show of a 7-1 score. He's only averaged 15.58 all year, so to play near 20 these last 2 games, he's really, really jumping that up. And we watched that happen when he got pushed up to line one recently, and they seem to kind of have a lot more faith in this kid. 21 goals in his rookie season and only 4 assists. So he's actually doubled, or I guess not doubled, but he surpassed his career assist totals or his career high in assists and added 2 more on top of that for a whopping 6.
That bar was set really high.
Very low. I actually like, how do you get 21 assists or 21 goals and 4 assists? Like even the kids I used to play hockey with who would shoot a lot, like the rebounds kick out. Anyways, it's a mystery, but the assists are coming out from Marchenko, and we've seen he's a proven goal scorer. So at 7% here, as mentioned on previous guys, you can't really get those top 6 players who actually produce and who have upside around this area. So I think Marchenko stands out, and that percentage is going to go up, especially after tonight. And also Columbus has been an absolute shit show. So to be doing this in that, imagine if things could go okay, like all right, maybe decent. Yeah. What do you got, Brock?
Is he Brandon Peary? I just looked up here. Remember when he had 22 goals and 2 assists that one year? That was insane. For his career, 72 goals and 49 assists. So funny. My under 10% is Kyle Palmieri at 4%. Right wing eligible for the New York Islanders. Now, I've always been, I think, the only one on this podcast that's even ever talked about Palmieri, but he's just so steady. And at this point, we're talking about deep leagues, and he's playing close to 18 minutes per night. He's still averaging over 2.5 shots per game, plays on the Islanders' top power play unit. The Islanders probably aren't going to score a ton, but either are the Blue Jackets, other than tonight. I think that's probably going to prevent him from being rosterable in standard size leagues. But in these deep leagues, Palmieri, Nelson, and Engvall have been absolutely crushing at 5v5, 3.9 expected goals per 60, 40 scoring chances, 18 high danger per 60. They've been dominating for, you know, Palmieri and Nelson have been dominating for years now at this point. So yeah, to me, he's going to just be a solid contributor throughout the rest of the season. Never going to be super flashy, but he's going to be there on a night-to-night basis with the shot volume. And if his shooting percentage and on-ice shooting percentage start to regress back closer to his career averages, I think that, you know, he's going to be a fine producer of goals. I think, honestly, him and Marchenko are pretty similar in terms of, like, their kind of profile and what they offer in fantasy. Marchenko, obviously, a lot younger and a lot more probably goal scoring upside because the shot volume is a little bit better. But at the same time, we've already seen him get healthy scratch this year. The Blue Jackets aren't afraid to just strap anybody to the bench at any
All
given
the cool
time.
Kids are doing it.
Yeah. So where Palmieri's really locked into an 18 minute per night role and power play one as well. So maybe a little bit more security with Palmieri, but less upside. So kind of depends what you're looking for.
I'll tell you, I know what it is. I'm shopping in the 0 to 5% bargain bin. I am not looking for security. I am looking for upside. This is a no-doubter for me. As soon as I heard the name Kyle Palmieri, I checked out for about 2 minutes there. So I'm going to roll with Kirill, the thrill, Marchenko. I love Marchenko. I mean, he was fantastic last year, like the best anomaly in the league. I think he was leading the AHL in scoring before he got called up too. Mm-hmm. But I think that shooting percentage bounced back for him. We saw how good his shot was last season in his limited role. So yeah, you know, his role is not as secure, but the kid's 23 years old. He's still fighting for ice time. And to me, like outside of Fantilli, Laine, Goudreau, there's no one with more offensive upside than Marchenko. And he could very well push his name into that conversation. So again, a little bit of bias coming through here. Kyle Palmieri is just never a name that makes me look twice in fantasy. But Marchenko certainly has had my attention since he came up last year. And it's just funny to see that now he's kind of due for a little bit of regression in the goal scoring after what he went through last year. And I think he scored, 12 or 13 goals before he found an apple. I love the upside with Marchenko. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there. And Palmieri, I think even Brock would admit we know what Palmieri is at this point, and he's not much to get excited for unless he were to move. I just don't think there's a whole lot for him to build off there in Long Island and the way they play the game. We saw him be an effective player in New Jersey when there was some better talent around him and some slightly more high event hockey, but that's just not the case on Long Island. So Palmieri is a big time pass for me. I can't even imagine holding on to him in the deepest of leagues. So I'm going to roll with Kirill.
I was hoping maybe the short-term bias would play in there. The fact that I've got Marchenko going head-to-head with you this week, and he's having a hell of a night early on tonight. I was like, maybe he'll be mad at him, but that was not the case. A couple other names just to throw at you, you know, in these really low-owned areas is, we're talking about bargain bin shopping, but Gus Nyquist, top line with the Nashville Predators, top power play unit as well right now, has actually played pretty well. And we've talked about that Ryan O'Reilly line with Phil Forsberg playing super, super well. And to me, he's somebody else that kind of sticks out. It was between him and Palmieri for me, but I just always love throwing Palmieri's name out because you guys just laugh at me every time. It's a weird obsession thing that I've got going on. And then I was going to just go full on, just placate to the judge. Matias Michelli's also still down there at 6% owned. I could have went that way, and D would have really had to think about it. So Matias Michelli also playing very well and skating with Nick Bjugstad and playing pretty consistent minutes in that line. Also has really, really strong underlying numbers. But all right, let's move on. Let's talk about some defensemen. Beeps, the points are closing up here. They're getting tight. And I have a feeling this one's going to come down to the wire because my defenseman I'm not super, super keen on. But there was none. Let it be known. There were no defensemen to talk about. So take it away, Biebs.
Yeah, when you mentioned bargain bin shopping, when we were picking from D, this was like picking through like back in the day when you'd forget
garbage
your coat.
Bin shopping.
Yeah, it's like when you forget your coat at school and like, yeah, go find or you spill on yourself. Or, like, go grab clothes from the lost and found. And there's like a sweater 8 sizes too big. But here we are, and I'm going to suggest that big sweater as Jared Spurgeon out in Minnesota. Might have heard of the guy. He's been there forever. Currently, this is not going to sell him to D, but he has 0 goals, 0 assists for 0 points in 4 games played. But
I'm in.
Yeah, pure sell. But our boy Jared just came back after missing about 15 or 16 games to an upper body injury. Kind of encouraging that he's still playing 2202 after joining with no preseason and missing all those games, realistically, I'm seeing him pushing closer to 23, 24 that we've seen in previous years. One reason why I love Jared Spurgeon amongst all the other defense that were available in this range is he plays power play one. None of the other defense really even can smell power play one, except for maybe Brock's pick, but mine's better because I'm telling you about Jared right now. He is he's just he's one of the better goal scorers in the NHL and or one of the better defensive goal scorers or defensemen who scores goals in the NHL over the last 5 years. He has 54 goals in five seasons. That's good for about 10.4 a year on average, which would have put him in 28th in the NHL last year across all D-men. That's rosterable in any 10 team league and more at that point. He gives you goals while not really hurting other cats. He had 149 shots last year, was a plus 32, which ranks sixth among all D-men. So if you're in one of those crazy leagues that has plus minus like we are, he has value in that regard. And he should, even though Minnesota is a little bit less of a team this year, as mentioned, loves score goals six times, double digit goal score. He's had two 40 plus goal seasons. And the biggest thing here is I think he's kind of strapped to that power play because we saw Minnesota move Callan Addison out of town, send him to San Jose. All he was doing was really taking Spurgeon's power play time. So now we got Spurgeon on power play one. And as things get better here, I expect Spurgeon to fully do better as well. So I don't think at this point with the 40 and down and D, you can really get anyone who's going to get you a lot of goals or even potentially a lot of goals. So that's where Spurgeon is an easy sell for me because you can get assists from a lot of other places. So grab your goals on D because they are rare. And so is that power play time. But Brock, you said you got another guy who touches power play. Who you got? Who you got?
Yeah, Ivan Provorov, 22% owned from the Blue Jackets. When you first hear Blue Jackets defenseman, you'd probably think of someone who's going to absolutely crater your plus minus. That hasn't really been the case. Came into tonight as a minus four. It's not too bad. Plus one tonight for the record. So he's up to minus three, you know, on the climb back to zero right now. But, we talked about it. You just said it with Marchenko. I think you have to imagine there are probably better days ahead in Columbus. It's been pretty ugly thus far. They got to get Gaudreau going. They got to get Line A on track if that relationship is even fixable at this point. But coming into tonight, Provorov has 12 points, one goal, 11 assists in 19 games. And as I mentioned, recently moved to the top power play unit in favor of Werenski at first. And then now they're rolling a two defenseman top power play unit with Werenski and Provorov. They've been kind of shuffling things around because, you know, they're really searching. So, how long the 2D look lasts, how long Provorov on PP1 lasts, we'll have to see. But right now it's been a couple games. And like we said, the free agent defenseman market, absolutely bleak. But Provorov at least offers you consistent and elite usage and currently power play one deployment. And yeah, Spurgeon scored double-digit goals, but let's not forget that in 2018, not going back too far, Provorov had 17 goals, also had 13 goals in 69 games in 2020. Is a guy that can score 6-9 goals in 22, so is a guy that can definitely put the puck in the back of the net. Shot volume hasn't exactly been outstanding so far this season, but up over 23 minutes a night. And with Damon Severson out long-term, he's been up over 24, 25 minutes, and I won't be surprised if he's 26, 27 moving forward with some of the injuries they have to deal with there. Judge D.
Yeah. I mean, that was tough to listen to. You guys are right. Like this is not the best options here, but that's just the state of the D market right now.
We're both guilty. We're both going to prison.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say Provorov's 23 shots in 19 games. It's just not going to do it for me. I mean, I'm guilty. I've rostered Provorov already this year myself just because of that usage. And I think in other leagues that counts some more supplemental stats. He definitely has some value. But yeah, I just think Spurgeon's role in that top power play unit is more secure. Like really it's him or Brodin. And like, while neither of them have had a great history of being a power play defenseman, the fact that Addison just out of the way, I do think they're going to want to give Spurgeon a lot of run there. Spurgeon's been very productive at 5v5 the last few seasons and just really hasn't gotten a run on the power play. I will lean Spurgeon here. Ideally, I don't have to roster either.
It is funny saying that 23 shots in 19 games isn't good, but five shots in four games is going to do it for it. No, I'm just kidding. I don't disagree.
Smaller sample size, baby.
Yeah, it's
more room to ramp up.
it's pretty ugly. Like, we were considering Sean Walker, power play two for the Philadelphia. Like, I mean, there's just nothing there right now. I think Neil Pionk is fine as well. He's kind of in the mix, but power play two, the on ice shooting percentage is absolutely super, super high. All right, I believe I haven't actually been tallying, but in my brain, I believe it is 3-3 through six rounds here. So one of us is getting sent to prison if we don't pick the right goalie. Biebs, you've been hot since you started, so let's see what you got here for your goalie.
Ooh, okay. Being hot in prison is not what we want, so I am hoping that I win this. I'm going off some recency bias here, but I got Charlie Lindgren out in Washington, 27% owned. Charlie Lindgren's just been the hottest goalie in hockey pretty much all year, but mostly just the last couple weeks. He currently is 4-1-0 with a 940 save percentage. I'm going to say it again, a 940 save percentage. That leads the NHL in a 2.01 goals against average. He has started four of Washington's last six games. He's won all four. He's got a shutout during that time. He has a career 909 save percentage across a pretty decent chunk of games. I don't know how much of this is necessarily, obviously he's not going to keep a 940, but when we're choosing guys 40% and down, we're basically choosing split starters and backups. And right now Charlie Lindgren's kind of doing everything he can to make sure that him and Darcy Kemper split starts, and Darcy Kemper is basically doing everything he can to make sure that him and Charlie Lindgren split starts, because Darcy's getting hurt. Has happened twice already this year. Darcy has an 892 save percentage and a 307 goals against average. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what happened in Minnesota last year as we watched kind of the tides turn with Gustafson. And that's kind of why I want to jump on this Charlie Lindgren train early. And I think it could be a play that pays off. A lot of people were really down on Washington to start the year, but they've kind of surprised a lot of us lately, and they're doing it with their defensive hockey. They're sixth in the NHL in goals allowed with only 2.67 allowed per game. Granted, they are 17th in the NHL in shots allowed. But those are nice numbers when we're looking at overall defensive metrics and ones that should overall just help Lindgren. And like I said, you know, we're choosing through discount bins. So if you can get a guy who's going to take 50% of starts on a plus 500 team, that's pretty good. And he should not hurt you too much in the other categories, as proven by his career numbers. Brock, though, you know what? Break this
tie. I feel pretty confident you're the one going to prison. mine is Pyotr Kochetkov of the Carolina Hurricanes, 32% owned. And at the start of the night, I felt confident in this one, and I feel even better now. There is yet to be an update on Frederik Andersen, and the Hurricanes just released Yaroslav Halak from his professional tryout. That means the Hurricanes are going to be rolling with Antti Raanta and Kochetkov moving forward. And Raanta will never play the bulk of the games because, well, he's too injury prone. So Kochetkov will likely find himself in a 50-50 split on one of the best teams in the league. And if you trash his first two starts, which were ugly, he's posted a 913 save percentage in his last three games. Also looked really, really good in the AHL. He also has elite upside if Raanta gets hurt, which he usually does. Let this be known that this was written prior to the games tonight, in which Raanta got hurt in the first period of the game against the Edmonton Oilers. Kochetkov has taken over in between the pipes, and he has played pretty well, I believe. He's only given up, he's given up one goal on four shots, so the Oilers just can't get any production going. If Raanta's going to miss any time now, obviously, like, coming into the night, I think we both would have agreed on Kochetkov if we knew Raanta was hurt. But now that he's hurt, this is, you know, an absolute no-brainer. I know in one of my leagues, we talked about him being a bust at the start of the season. In one of my leagues, he got dropped, and I actually have Raanta and Kochetkov, and I feel really good about that. But now that, you know, Ranta's gone down, Kochetkov's an absolute money pickup. Judge D, break the tie. Who's going to prison?
Got a feel for Biebs, because I think I might have sided with Lindgren if it weren't for that injury tonight. But
take me.
I have just decided as the judge that we are not going to strike that injury from the record. We are, in fact, going to consider it. I got
a last minute here. Evidence came into light.
Yeah, I'm sure Kochetkov would have went earlier in your little free agency draft here had Raanta also been hurt. And who knows what's going on with Ranta's injury. But no, I agree. I think Lindgren definitely worth a pickup as well if you need some help in goal. Just because he played so well, Kemper loves to get hurt. That's kind of his thing. And to Biebs' point, really hasn't looked all that great this year. Lingard's thing is kind of looking really good in small sample sizes and then just petering out when he finally gets a chance. So we'll see happens there. But I would roll with the hot hand in the meantime. And like Beeb said, they've, I think, a better team than most people give them credit for out in Washington this year. But yeah, obviously with the injuries now and just even the slight chance that Kochetkov could be the number one, you got to go with him. So unfortunate, Beebs, nothing you can really do about that one. That one's out of your control.
Yeah, no, like Brock said, you bring out that late evidence and sometimes that just kills you, but you got
to
respect.
Yeah, normally you have to disclose your evidence to the other side, but not in my court, son.
Yeah, not in Detroit Lions D's court. But it's been fun. And as always, I love trying to sell myself to D. So that was good. But Brock, sometimes the better man just wins.
Yeah, you're heading over to Waivers Correctional Facility and we'll see you back here next week. One-week sentence. I don't know why I'm handing out the sentence. I'm not the judge. But yeah, that was good times. I think, you know, as long as the listeners enjoyed it, I think this is something we can bring back because at the end of the day, you know, we're usually giving out a lot of names and maybe not necessarily saying who our favorite guy is. We're just rattling off names because at the end of the day, we're still trying to give you plenty of options in case people aren't available in your league. So now we've got a deciding voice. I think maybe next time, Beebs, you can be judge or I'll be judge if we want to continue this go. Because, yeah, it was a lot of fun. But have anything to add on D's court before we get to D's streamers?
I think the reason we do it is so that you guys at home can be D and be the judge, though. So, you know, take what we both say into perspective, how you want to choose it. You know, let D's options and what we say, you know, fuel where you go. But absolutely, that's kind of what it's all about. So, we all have, are they gavels? We all have gavels. Look at
it
us.
It is gavel.
Look at me knowing terms.
I will say, I think the main takeaway from this is that the defenseman position this year is incredibly thin. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have, you know, three or four, depending on your format, bona fide starters, do not hesitate to roster less than you need to. Because I've got multiple leagues where I just have blank empty spots on my D position. And, you know, it's just, if we're talking about fitting Jared Spurgeon in for an extra game or picking up a guy like Wyatt Johnston to roll in there, you know, it's a no brainer for me. You're going to get more value, even if it's out of less games that you're kind of squeezing into your lineup out of those forwards that you can find on free agents that you want on defense. So hopefully, you know, you set yourself nice up in the draft. Cause I mean, aside from like Mitnikov in Anaheim, there really hasn't been any great pickups off of free agency on the back end this year. That's a good call. I do have him in a lot of leagues because of this, but I think that's just one of the main takeaways here. Just don't hesitate to cut bait with some of these defensemen and maybe don't waste your time trying to pick up some of these guys that just aren't really ever going to get the minutes they need and the usage they need to really deliver in fantasy. Because we say every time, like, it's really hard to return any sort of fantasy value as a defenseman if you're not getting heavy minutes and if you're not on the top power play unit on a half decent team. Like, you know, even Spurgeon, like I like Spurgeon, I like the upside there, but Minnesota's probably going to be like a bottom 12 power play the rest of the year. Is that going to be, you know, how much upside is there really there? So it just depends. But I think that's one of the main takeaways. Just don't hesitate to just not roster the amount of D that are required to start in a given night if the options aren't there.
Yeah, I think the one name that sticks out still under 40% that I definitely would have went with if Adam Fox's return wasn't so imminent is Eric Gustafson, 36% owned. He's been terrific. It just seems like way too much of a short-term ad because Fox looks like his return's pretty close to returning. So he's probably the real pickup there. I think another one, he's not under 50 or under 40, but Jakob Slavin, 59%. Tony D'Angelo was scratched tonight. Slavin expected to be on the top power play unit. He'd be somebody that could be available that might be able to help out a little bit. To further your point, it also kind of makes sense to potentially make a move for a defenseman and sell high potentially on one of your forwards, because a lot of people usually will be quick to trade off a defenseman for a forward. And if you have four really good defensemen, it puts you at a big advantage given how bad the defensive pool is across the league. So if you have a stable of really good forwards, it might not be the worst idea to sacrifice one of them for a defenseman. But that is going to do it for D's court. Now we are going to send it over to D's streamers.
So with American Thanksgiving, happy Turkey Day to all of our American listeners, by the way, taking place on Thursday, it's thrown the schedule completely out of whack this week. There's 15 games on Friday, 8 on Saturday, and then 5 on Sunday. So Ideally, we'd be looking at skaters playing on Saturday and Sunday in order to get, you know, two games out of one possible ad. But of course, just because the NHL loves to mess with us here at DFO, there are no teams playing back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday. So we're going to skip skaters this week because it's just going to be all about finding the best one-off games available on the wire in your given league on Saturday and Sunday. And we're going to go right to the tendies. So like I said, no teams are playing Saturday and Sunday, but there are a handful of teams playing back-to-back on Friday and Saturday, meaning we got a couple of decent spot starts to comb through for Saturday's eight-game slate. I don't know why I said a couple. There's actually five. So we'll get us started off with Biebs' Colorado Avalanche. They're in Minnesota on Friday before hosting the Flames on Saturday. Ivan Prosvetov, 2% owned. I would expect Georgiev to draw the injured division matchup in Minnesota on Friday, which would leave Prosvetov to take on the Flames on Saturday. The Flames will also be on the tail end of a back-to-back, meaning we can expect Dan Vladar to get the start and for the Avalanche to be sizable home favorites over the Flames. It would be just the third start of the season for Prosvetov, and he really couldn't ask for a much better matchup. He has been fantastic this season with an .899 save percentage and a 2.9 goals against average, but he's only got those two starts. And he, you know, he's been serviceable, and this is the exact kind of matchup that you're hoping for when you get a backup in between the pipes on the tail end of a back-to-back. So comes with a bit of a risk to your splits, but I think he's a great bet to make if you're looking to add to your win totals this weekend. Up next, we got the Kings, who are in Anaheim on Friday before hosting the Canadiens on Saturday. And of course, that means we're talking about Phoenix Copley, just 11% owned. Another great projected start to target here, as we can expect Copley to play host to the Habs on Saturday. Montreal, again, also on a back-to-back Friday, Saturday, so we don't need to worry about the fatigue of LA skaters being a potential factor here. And just like Prosvetov and the Avs, Copley and the Kings should be sizable home favorites on Saturday. Copley has, of course, had his fair share of struggles this season, which is why I would prefer the Avalanche netminder to him this weekend. But if you are late to the wire, or you could potentially squeeze two starts into your lineup on Friday, on Saturday, that is, excuse me, Copley is a more than viable option. 845 save percentage and a 3.75 goals against average on the year. He's not been great, but he's still a great bet to add to your win totals this weekend. And he's coming off his best start of the season, where he stopped 30 of the 31 shots he faced in Monday's 4-1 victory over my Coyotes. New Jersey hosting the Blue Jackets on Friday before hosting the Sabres on Saturday. So Akira Schmid, 27% owned. The issue here is that Schmid plays more than the average backup. Vanacek's going on Wednesday night and has started three straight. So there's a greater chance here that Schmid could get the front end of the back-to-back on Friday. He's obviously struggled mightily this year as well. So again, another risk to your split here, but again, a favorable matchup on home ice against the Sabres. The Devils are going to be favored in that game, and we know the potential is there with Schmid. We saw how effective he was last season. So I'd still prefer Prosvetov and Copley to Schmid, but I think a fine consolation prize if Schmid does in fact get the nod on Saturday. And then we're going to the Islanders. They are in Ottawa on Friday before hosting the Flyers on Long Island on Saturday. Semyon Varlamov, 34% owned. He's been outstanding this year. Kind of similar to Schmid, though. He's getting more work than your average backup, so there's certainly a chance he gets the call on Friday. He's not as widely available at 34% owned, but if he does get the call on Saturday, he goes up to the top of my streaming board. He's been excellent when called upon this season, posted a .934 save percentage and a 2.18 goals against average. Although the goal support hasn't been fantastic on Long Island this season, it never is, but leaves him with just a 2-3-1 record to show for his efforts so far. But there's still no denying that he is in the best form out of anyone that we've mentioned here so far. So you want to make sure Ilya Sorokin is in fact starting the game on Friday's 15-game slate before you move to add Varlamov on Saturday. And then finally, we got the Canucks. They're in Seattle on Friday before traveling to San Jose on Saturday. Casey DeSmith, my boy, 16% owned. Last but certainly not least, we got Mr. Steady Eddie himself, the king of delivering acceptable, mediocre performances and goal. That's why I love him. He tends to come through in these easy matchups, and that's exactly what he should get on Saturday in San Jose. Expect the Canucks to be big, big road favorites. You can count on the goal support being there. And as I alluded to DeSmith, he's been solid when called upon this season. He's got a .912 save percentage, a 2.89 goals against average. Another great option on Saturday's eight-game slate. So assuming they'll all go on Saturday, I'd go Varlamov at the top, then DeSmith, then Prosvetov, then Copley, and then Schmid rounding it up. The bottom three, they're all strong matchups, but shaky individual play means there's just inevitably more risk to those three. Varlamov, I'll take the strong splits and the slight edge in that margin of victory. And then DeSmith's kind of the best of both worlds. He's got the solid splits and a really, really good matchup. So that's who I'm looking at adding on Saturday in particular. And like I said, in terms of skaters, it's just going to be all about finding the best one-offs you can for Saturday and Sunday. And I'd imagine just with the way the schedule is shaking out this week, you probably have more transactions to burn this weekend than usual. So yeah, just scout your wire, you know, do a little bit of research, because, you know, I certainly can't look at everyone's free agency pool. If you want to, you know, at me on Twitter, I'll be happy to help you out. But yeah, that's going to be the play. Get those best one-offs that you can on Saturday and Sunday in the skaters, and look to add any of those five goalies I mentioned for Saturday's 8-game slate.
It was an all-D episode of the DFO Fantasy Podcast presented to you by Betway. D's court, D's streamers. It was a good one. But we have to, before we go, of course, make sure that we make our Betway bets of the day. And because this is being recorded on Wednesday and we have the massive Thanksgiving slate on Thursday, three great games, let's take a look at some bets from the football market, which is something we almost never do. Now, keep in mind that I am a noted hockey expert. Football, maybe not so much, but looking at tomorrow's three-game slate, you've got the Packers, the Lions, you've got the Commanders, the Cowboys, you got the 49ers and the Seahawks. I obviously like the Detroit Lions to win, -7.5. Don't love the juice there. Probably going to pass. I will say I do like the under 47.5 in the Packers-Lions game. Short week. Don't think it's going to be quite as high scoring as some of the Lions games have been recently. Packers have trouble moving the ball at times. So yeah, I'll go under 47.5 for the Packers-Lions game. And then I think I'll sprinkle maybe half a unit on the Commanders to cover 13.5 in Dallas. The Cowboys obviously just outstanding, but Sam Howell, low key, pretty good. So I'll go 13.5 plus 13.5 for the Commanders, under 47.5 for the Detroit Lions Green Bay game. And that is going to do it for the Betway bets of the day. Do not forget that the DFO Fantasy Podcast is presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet on Betway, please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. That will also do it for this edition of the DFO Fantasy Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for Judge D for showing up for the first half of the show. And until next time, we'll see you guys. Enjoy your Thanksgiving if you are an American listener, and we'll see you guys back here next week.
Coming from a prison cell, enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Peace.